Rule number 19. If you don't work together, you'll never finish your wigwam. It took so long to get to the stables from the administrative offices that Mary Kay and I missed Blacksmith Todd's forge demonstration, where he stuck pieces of metal into a very hot furnace and melted it. Apparently, this was quite a popular demonstration, especially with the boys. But we got there in time to see him put the shoe he'd made from the molten metal onto the horse. It's hard to believe the nails going in doesn't hurt the horse, but it doesn't, Blacksmith Todd assured us. It's no different than getting your toenails cut. In fact, horses need to wear shoes to protect their feet just like we do. Blacksmiths, we learned, were very important in the 1800s, like car mechanics are today, not only because they shod all the horses, which was the main way people got around in olden times, but because they made practically everything else back then too, like frying pans and even guns. Patrick found this particularly interesting. You couldn't just go to Target or Walmart and buy one because there were no stores like those in olden times. You had to go to a blacksmith and have whatever you wanted made. Blacksmith Todd did his best to bring Team Shawnee together with his talk about the importance of men who had his job in olden times. But it was clear from the moment Mary Kay and I showed up that things on our team had been severed beyond repair. All the Pine Heights kids were standing on one side of the stable, and all the Walnut Knolls kids were standing on the other. Even the size of Mary Kay's swollen chin, which was amazing, wasn't enough to unite them. It took a visit to Mistress Carol and the authentic replica of a Native American wigwam she was in charge of making us build to do that. Because by that time, everyone was so mad at one another, a total fight broke out.
"You're not doing it right," Lenny Sue was yelling. "Hold them straight."
"We are holding them straight," Paige said, referring to the sapling branches we were holding and that we were supposed to form into a structure that would eventually house all of us once we covered the sapling branches with mats, which would keep out the rain we were supposed to pretend was coming. "This is going to take forever," Cheyenne said, holding her sapling branch in place while Lenny and Scott scrambled around inside the wigwam, binding them together with string. Cheyenne was right. Also, it was totally hot out, and there were more bees.
"You're doing so well," Mistress Carol assured us.
Mistress Carol had been the lady I'd seen in the parking lot who'd been dressed the strangest out of all the prairie people. She had on a long skirt and a corset thingy on the outside, and all her waist-length hair was flowing free. She was also wearing a ton of necklaces.
"I can feel the positive energy coming from you children. You'll have this wigwam built in no time."
"No, we won't," Cheyenne said, giving Mistress Carol a sour look. "Because we're going to have to leave to catch our bus in half an hour, and there's no way it's going to be finished by then."
"Ow!" Lauren shrieked at Joey, letting go of her branch. "You stepped on my finger!"
And that's when the fighting started for real.
"He did it!" Brittany yelled, pointing at Joey. "Chuck did! It's all his fault!"
"Stop calling him Chuck!" I yelled. "It's not his name!"
"I didn't mean to," Joey said to Lauren. "I'm sorry about your finger!"
"Come on now," Mistress Carol said. "If you don't work together, you'll never finish your wigwam."
"None of this would be happening," Cheyenne shouted at Brittany, "if you weren't all such stuck-up snobs."
"Stop," Mistress Carol said, grabbing Brittany's wrist, then Cheyenne's, and holding on to them. "All of you, stop. Just stop a moment and stand still. Take a breath. Breathe in, out. In, out."
We all stood where we were in the skeleton of our team's wigwam and did what Mistress Carol said. We breathed in and out. In the distance, I could hear birds chirping in the treetops and the far-off drone of more bees.
"Now," Mistress Carol said, "sit. Wherever you are, just sit."
Cheyenne looked down at the ground.
"But my mother rented this period costume from New York, and if I get it wrinkled, it will cost $30 to hand press each individual."
"Just sit," Mistress Carol said, and she yanked Cheyenne to the ground with her.
We all sat, including Cheyenne.
even though she didn't look too happy about it.
In the days when the Shawnee and the Pawnee and the Illini and the Miami Indians actually lived in this area, Mistress Carol said, sitting cross-legged with her eyes closed, they had a practice from which I believe you children could learn a thing or two. It was when some of the members of the tribe, often around your age, would come together for a sort of spiritual quest.
You mean like a walkabout? I asked in surprise. Mistress Carol opened one of her eyes and looked at me.
No, she said. That's Australian.
Oh, I said, disappointed.
I'm talking about building a wigwam, Mistress Carol said, closing her eyes again. Just like those children from ancient times, each one of you has weaknesses and strengths. None of you is perfect. And just like those children from ancient times, each one of you has to learn to work with one another in order to help overcome your own weaknesses and make the most of your strengths until you've all achieved your goal. Of course, you could let petty bickering and closed-mindedness stand in your way, so your wigwam will never get built. Or you could open your heart and mind and just accept one another's differences and build the most amazing wigwam you can in the limited time we have left. Which is it going to be?
Open my heart and mind, I thought.
I can't hear you, Mistress Carol said.
Open our hearts and minds, a few of us murmured.
It's funny, Mistress Carol said. I still can't hear you.
Open our hearts and minds, we all said.
Well there, Mistress Carol said, opening her eyes and getting up. Wasn't that simple? And now I want you to stand up and work together to finish your wigwam, keeping your hearts and minds open to each of your unique differences, which are what make you such amazing individuals. Because if you can do that, Team Shawnee, you can do anything.
I didn't think it was going to work. All Mistress Carol had done, after all, was make us sit on the ground while she gave a speech about keeping our hearts and minds open. She hadn't even had us walk through a 13-foot-tall working model of a heart so we could see the way the ventricles and arteries worked, or anything like that. If you really want to open your heart, that would be the way to go about it, if you ask me. But for some reason, we finished that wigwam anyway. Lauren didn't argue anymore with Joey about stepping on her finger. Lenny didn't yell at us for not keeping the branches straight. Cheyenne didn't even complain about how the whole thing was taking forever. Of course, our wigwam didn't look very good. It looked awful, in fact. If it rained, no way would we have stayed dry. Our wigwam would have melted away. But when it was done, we could all fit inside it. It was kind of cool, crouching inside our wigwam, shoulder to shoulder, looking out at Honey Pot Prairie through the branches we twisted together ourselves. It was kind of like being inside the Space Quest planetarium, except it wasn't a planetarium, and it didn't have a dinosphere. But we'd made it ourselves, without killing one another, while keeping our hearts and minds open to each of our unique differences, which were what made us such amazing individuals. It was funny, but I doubted we could have learned that in a planetarium. When Team Shawnee got on the bus, we were all feeling like one big happy family. Give me your cell number, Dominique was saying to Lauren. Ooh, give me yours, Lauren was saying. I'm going to have a sleepover, Brittany was saying, and you're all invited. I can't wait, Cheyenne squealed.
Wait, Scott was saying to Joey. I thought you said it was faux fur.
No, Joey said. I just said that so the girls wouldn't get upset. It's real fur. My uncle shot and skinned it when he was a kid.
Sweet, Paul Schmidt said.
Can I touch it?
No,
Joey said.
Hands off the hat.
Oh, no!
Mary Kay caught a glimpse of her reflection in the rearview mirror of the bus.
That's how I look? I look awful. Allie, why didn't you tell me?
She burst into tears and wouldn't speak to me anymore. I guess no matter how much you open your mind to one another's unique differences, some things will never really change.
Allie, Allie! Sophie cried, pulling me down next to her as I was going down the bus aisle. I'd been heading back toward the same seat I'd shared with Rosemary on the way to Honey Pot Prairie. But Sophie had other ideas for me.
Will you talk to Erica, please? She begged.
Why? I asked. What's wrong with Erica? Erica was sitting next to the window, crying uncontrollably.
It was just, she sobbed, so wonderful.
What was? I asked her bewilderedly.
The whole thing, Erica said. The field trip, Mrs. Higginbottom, Master Baker Sean, Mistress Carol, the horses. Didn't you love it? I don't want it to end, ever. I wish I could go back in time and live in the 1850s.
I guess I could understand why Erica had such a good time. I mean, she hadn't had Brittany, Cheyenne, Patrick, and Stuart on her team, not to mention Mary Kay. I wondered what Honey Pot Prairie must have been like from Erica's point of view. Obviously, totally magical, like Narnia, if she was crying that hard because she didn't want to go home. See? Sophie whispered to me, shaking her head. I told you. You have to talk to her. She's nuts. I mean, it was fun, but not that fun. I was relieved someone else had some perspective on the whole thing.
Oh my gosh, you guys, Caroline said, her head and shoulders popping over to the seat back in front of ours.
Elizabeth Pukowski joined her.
Was that amazing or what?
It was certainly interesting, I said.
Interesting, Caroline echoed. It was fantastic. Wasn't that the best bread you ever had? I'm going to get a cookbook so I can learn how to make bread like Master Baker Sean.
Well, Sophie said, I'm totally taking a first aid course in case anyone is ever stung by a bee like that again and needs medical aid. That way, I'll be ready, like Mrs. Hunter was.
Caroline looked at her funny. What are you talking about?
Oh, right! Sophie cried. You weren't there. Well, that friend of Allie's, Mary Kay. And she started telling Caroline and Elizabeth all about Mary Kay's bee sting.
I was sitting there, kind of zoning out, thinking about all the strange things that had happened during the day and how different they must have seemed from other people's perspectives, when all of a sudden, someone said my name, and I looked up, and it was Mrs. Hunter.
Here, she said with a smile. You forgot this. And she handed me my backpack.
Oh, I said, thanks so much. I couldn't believe I'd been so irresponsible as to forget it.
I think you'll find there's a surprise inside the front pocket, she said with a wink before going to take her seat, for being such a help today.
Not knowing what she could be talking about, I felt inside the front pocket and pulled out a couple of folded sheets of paper. When I opened them, I saw that they were photocopies of George Washington's Rules of Civility and Decent Behavior in Company and Conversation. I felt an electric jolt of excitement go through me. Oh, wow, I cried, looking around for someone to show. But everyone was busy talking. Or crying. No one, I realized, would care as much as me. Except for Mrs. Hunter.
It was just like her to know that I would care, and to remember.
I folded the rules up and put them back in my backpack pocket, not because I didn't want to read them all right away, but because the bus had started, and reading while the car is going always makes me feel sick. And you never want to be the person to throw up on the bus.